Monster Man, Episode 473, Zombie, and Monster's Manual Wrap-Up. Hello, and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm taking a look at the monsters that I find in them, their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. In today's episode, we are concluding our journey through Monster's Manual, the 1993 supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 2nd Edition. It's been a journey, and I have some thoughts about it, although I'm not going to spend all this episode complaining about this book, so stand by for me not doing that. Before I don't do that, though, it's time to thank some new Patreon backers. Yes, these are people who've gone to patreon.com/monsterman, and they have pledged as little as $1 a month to help support the show. And if, like today's backers, you pledge at the $2 or higher level, you'll also get access to all new episodes of my other podcast, Patron Deities. So thank you very much to new Patreon backers, Orcus Dorcas, but who is backing on behalf of Noah, and Hunt Cal. Your support means a lot to me. Thank you very much. All right, this is it, the final episode of this season. And I'm not going to have very much to say about the actual monster here because it's zombies. It's zombies. What do you want from me? They have been done and they are fine here. They are zombies. You know what you're getting with a zombie. I think in a fantasy game, people don't mind seeing zombies turn up. The fantasy zombie is a little bit different in some ways from the kind of zombie movie zombie. And we'll see that some of these subtypes here bring that creature a little more into line with different versions of the zombie. But they're all fine. This is an omnibus entry. It contains 5 types of zombies. You got your common zombie, your monster zombie, your juju zombie, your zombie lord, and your sea zombie. So the sea zombie, obviously, that's an aqua version of the monster. Although, actually, having said that, there's some good stuff with them. Your juju zombie is a little smarter and more aggressive. Not wild about the name. Your monster zombie is what if it wasn't a human to begin with. And your zombie lord is even smarter and more dangerous than a juju zombie and can kind of control other zombies. All of these monsters are perfectly fine. The sea zombie, drowned ones, as they are called, animated by the will of Nerl, and they, you know, prey on sailors and what have you. It's a Pirates of the Caribbean kind of situation. You know, I think no matter how jaded you are, you're going to enjoy fighting off a shambling mob of zombie pirates once. Zombies are a bread and butter monster, but there's nothing wrong with that, you know? You need a bread and butter monster from time to time. A diet of nothing but birthday cake would actually be a little bit much. So with that out of the way, let's wrap up Monster's Manual. You know, I think it's no secret that I am not an enormous fan of this book. And rather than spend the rest of this episode being critical of it, I mean, I think my criticisms are going to appear in this discussion, but I want to take a look at this book as charitably as possible. So what I'm going to do is try to focus on the areas where I think the Monster's Manual succeeds, or the context that needs to be remembered in order to judge it fairly. What do I mean by that? Okay, first off, let's start out talking about the utility of this book and the context of its release, because one of the things that I like the least about this book is that there isn't all that much new material. A lot of stuff is just taken from one of the previous first edition monster books and expanded to greater length without really being changed or reimagined in any way. And that's maybe kind of an unfair thing to expect because I very much don't think that that's what the creators of this book were going for. You know, this is not supposed to be an addition to the original Monster Manual, MM77. It's a replacement for it, right? Not everybody wants to run their game in 1993 with a book that came out in 1977, or more to the point, 3 books from between 1977 and 1983, plus goodness knows how many Dragon magazine articles. So a big feature of this book is that it is just the monsters for 2nd edition, you know, updated rules for 2nd edition, all in one place. And maybe it's unfair to judge it by other standards than those. If you have seen it all before, then this isn't terribly exciting, but that's not really who this is intended for. I think it does raise the question of what the balance is like for the new edition of a game. I've been thinking about this lately because I've been reading RuneQuest, the new RuneQuest Glorantha, where there's a very weird comment where they say this is the fourth edition published by Chaosium. There have been other editions published by other companies, most notably Design Mechanism. And with the greatest of respect for Design Mechanism, in a list of companies that includes Games Workshop, Design Mechanism is not the most notable company. I get what they're saying, you know, but it just sounds funny. Anyway, my point is, one of the things that you can really see them doing in that game is trying to balance making the game interesting and new for people who are old fans of the RuneQuest system or the Glorantha setting, while also trying to make it accessible for people for whom this is their first exposure to both. And I think so far, at least, I'm not done reading it. I think the quality of the explanations is really good. But anyway, my point is just that there's that same tension, you know, what percentage of your readers for your second edition book are going to be existing owners of your first edition book. Some games like Vampire, for instance, or even Unknown Armies update like the plot of the game world from book to book, but I don't think that that's an approach that AD&D would ever take. So it is an interesting question, and it's maybe unfair of me to judge this book solely from the perspective of someone who regards like the zombie entry in the Monster Manual as a solved problem. There is a new edition. The new edition has new rules. The new edition needs a new monster book. This is that book. And it's not unreasonable for that book to share a lot with the previous 16-year-old book it replaces. Or, I mean, 11 when the Monsters Compendiums start coming out. But that's still a long time. Okay, point two. Presentation. Look, I like Dave Sutherland's art as much as the next guy. Or, I mean, okay, maybe I don't. But I would say that the audience for older editions of classic fantasy RPGs, taken as a set of next guys, like Dave Sutherland's art an unusual amount. There are a lot of like creative and interesting aspects of Dave Sutherland's art, but it lacks a certain level of polish. I think we can all agree on that. Despite the iconic status of the 1977 Monster Manual, a lot of the art is okay at best. Trompier, as I tend to think of him, or Trampier, as I've heard others say, stands out. And obviously there are good artists in other books as well. I love Jim Holloway, but I would hardly say that Monster Manual 2 is his best work. Obviously, Fiend Folio looks a lot better than its American counterparts, because, you know, it's Russ Nicholson and Alan Hunter. But my understanding is that that book was pretty divisive when it came out. A lot of people didn't like the kind of more horror-y, involuted style of a Russ Nicholson compared to the kind of cleaner-cut fantasy style that was becoming the norm at TSR. So, in some ways, Monstrous Manual is a step forward in terms of presentation. Some of the art in here I am not wild about, but for most of the stuff I don't like, the worst thing you could say is that it's kind of blandly professional. You know, there'll be an entry on a bear, and then accompanying it is a picture of a bear. And you're like, yep, that's a bear, all right. It's not terrible, but it's not very inventive or interesting. But then some of the art in here is by Tony DiTerlizzi. Now, Tony DiTerlizzi, as a kind of like classic fantasy illustrator, I think it's not how people think of him. They think of like the fairy tale stuff, and they think, of course, of Planescape. You know, for me, it's Changeling that is the DiTerlizzi illustrated game that really, you know, that's the game I associate him with in my mind. But you have to say that with one or two exceptions, DiTerlizzi hosses this book. Like, it is a bravura performance, and which unfortunately has the effect of making some of the other illustrations look a little bit worse. But I love a lot of the, even the very matter-of-fact DiTerlizzi illustrations in here, like the bugbear or the gnoll. They're just characterful. They're fun. If you showed that picture to the players, they'd get a cool image that really evokes a certain style of fantasy. Now, maybe that's a problem for a book like Monster's Manual, which is trying to be very middle of the road, but I think they really work. This book would be much better if it was all Tony DiTerlizzi art, although presumably that would have taken too long. And without any disrespect intended to the other artists, who were fine, but DiTerlizzi's the standout. And although I razz the one-page monster format because it does sometimes lead to padded entries or entries with a lot of white space, this does avoid the problem where, like in Monster Manual, there are creature entries that are split over multiple pages, like where the end of a paragraph is not at the end of a page. So not having to flip back and forth between the different pages of almost any monster entry during play is very useful. And you have to admit that the layout is clear, it's readable. I wouldn't necessarily say it's always easy to find what you're looking for, like maybe the text could be organized better. Actually, this is my third category, isn't it? Convenience. The layout is readable. The text could be a little more readable in terms of like where information is placed, not always immediately obvious. The omnibus entries do make it simpler to look up certain types of monster, although there aren't enough of them. At a book level rather than a monster entry level, I think in some ways this is superior to the previous system. If I put out of my mind my concerns about the kind of tone of the book, its mood, and just focus on the utility of using it at the table, I would say this is not a bad book, although it's awful big. I will say that. This is a trend in role-playing game books that I'm not a big fan of. I don't mind so much now, but when I started running my D&D game, I had to bicycle to, because like several of the players in the game were housemates. And so I ran the game in the house that they all lived in, which was not that far from my house, but I had to like carry the books in my bag on my bicycle. And this would have been an annoying book to transport. These days we play at my place, so I don't care how big the book is really. You know, so I wish it were a little more efficient, maybe multiple monsters on the same page, you know. But in terms of utility, in terms of, you know, usability, I would say that there are some definite steps in the right direction. So all of this kind of sounds like damning this book with faint praise, because what it's not is inspirational and like imagination firing in the way that the earlier books were. But to be honest, MM93 kind of didn't have a chance in that respect. MM77 was literally a game changer. It has had a huge influence, not just on D&D, not just on role-playing games in general, but on the way we think about monsters as a culture as a whole. Monster Manual 2, maybe not so much, but even Fiendfolio, I think, was quite influential. For many people, I think it was their first exposure to that weird combination of like darkness and whimsy that I think was more prevalent in the British gaming scene, even though I think a lot of Americans were not, you know, they didn't quite know what to do with that. I don't think they were too wild about it. But the remake is never going to have the same impact as the original. A good remake recontextualizes or reinterprets the original and brings a fresh perspective to it, and uses the same story to make a point that you didn't see the first time, or updates it to make it more contemporary. I'm not saying there aren't good remakes, because there are, but maybe it's not the Gus Van Sant Psycho. Maybe it's the Disney live-action remake of gaming books. It doesn't inspire delight or hatred. It's fine. But there was nothing wrong with the first one, I don't think, that required a new version, especially not one that was essentially just a straight retelling of the original. It's fine. The problem with these kinds of remakes is always that the thing that they're remaking is a classic, or else they wouldn't be remaking it. Now, not the book, but the season. I will say that this season, I did get a little bit of a wake-up call, for which I thank listener Edwin. Because in the middle of this season, I was kind of in the dumps. You know, I was getting a lot of repetitive entries. I was getting a lot of entries that have that, for me, the style of game writing that I like the least, which is that sort of mid-period TSR, or late-period TSR, maybe even, where it's so, like, it's dry and academic, but without the information or erudition that makes academic writing like that. So academic writing can be difficult to get through because you have to wade through all this information. But here the information is just, I mean, it's nothing. It's irrelevant or nonsensical. And I was really down in the dumps, and a lot of my mainline episodes were just me going, yeah, this monster's bad, this monster's bad, this monster's bad. And it was Edwin who kind of challenged me to do the makeovers, to take a monster that I didn't like and think, well, how could I change this to something that I do like? And that did really change my perspective on some of these creatures, you know, or at least on the episodes about them. And that's going to be the system that we'll be using going forward. And I'm looking forward to it. So, okay, what's coming up next? It's going to be a little while before we begin the next regular season of Monster Man. I would anticipate probably not before June. Instead, we're going into a period that I like to call oops, all specials, because I had some low special months in 2022, and because, thankfully, I've got a larger number of top-level subscribers than I used to, I have fallen a bit behind in the special schedule, and I think doing Oops All Specials for a while is going to help clear out some of that backlog, and also just make a nice little palate cleanser in between seasons. For the next season, we might wind up doing a Monsters Compendium supplement, or a Monsters Manual supplement, whatever they're called, for one of the TSR settings of the day. To me, I think the main three possibilities are Spelljammer, Dark Sun, and Ravenloft. And I'll probably put up a poll for the patrons to choose which one. My initial inclination was for Ravenloft, because to me, that seems like the one that has the highest level of, like, outside references. So if I do Ravenloft, I'm going to be able to talk about different Gothic novels and Hammer movies and so on and so forth. But it's also been pointed out to me that that might also be the one with the highest level of just, like, skeletons and zombies and Frankensteins, which we have previously covered. Maybe they'll be interestingly different. I don't know. But so if you're a patron, stand by for a poll on the Patreon side to help us decide which book we're going to do next. But until then, we're going to be focusing on specials for the next month or two. And I'm actually really looking forward to it. We've got a lot of fun topics lined up, and I'm very pleased. And that's going to begin at the end of this week with an episode on the monsters of the fantasy war game Cronopia. So I hope that you will all join me then. For Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. If you've got a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, why not get in touch? I'm on Twitter as @GonzoHistory, on Mastodon as GonzoHistory@dice.camp, or you can find me on Instagram at MonsterManGonzo, or drop me an email, GonzoHistory@gmail.com. Our theme music is an extract from Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster and is used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Our cover art is by Ray Otis. Thanks for listening, and please join me next time for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great.